Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Case, where is Andre?
Apparently he's in Korea. He's a ways away.
So if you were expecting Andre, unfortunately, you're stuck with me. And of course you get Case, which is a bonus. But you're stuck with me because Andre is driving the IONIQ 9 in Korea.
Yeah, which is a really cool trip. So I don't blame him for going, but it's also a long one because he left over this past weekend and he gets back in over this next weekend.
Yeah, and oddly enough, an IONIQ 9 isn't the truck.
No.
So you may be wondering, why is he driving it? Why isn't me or Tommy or Jen or one of the other people doing it, or you? And the reason is he got to go drive the prototype of the IONIQ 9 last year in Sweden.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I kind of figured, well, let him, you know, finish the story. He started it.
So. Yeah, he's up to speed on what's going on with that vehicle so he can, like you said, kind of wrap it up.
Yeah, and he'll be the first to get to drive it in Korea, which is pretty cool. Hey, so what's this podcast about?
Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about truck innovation because, as always, there's a lot going on in the truck world, and there has been for the last couple of years, so it gives us a lot to talk about and things that we'd like to see in the future, too.
All right, I'm going to say something that's controversial. And
oh, boy.
You're going to hate this?
I don't doubt it.
And you guys are going to hate this, too, but sometimes the truth hurts, all right? The most innovative truck, Case.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
What's the most innovative?
It's the Cybertruck.
It's the Cybertruck. Exactly right. And you know why? Because it combines all these new things that have never been done before, the way that it was constructed, right?
You
can love it or hate it, but it is innovative, right? The fact that it's got this kind of exoskeleton. I'm having a hard time saying that.
Like an insect.
Yeah.
Another unattractive thing.
Yes. The fact that it has rear wheel steering. Now, this is something that's been around before. Do you remember?
Yeah, quadra steer.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but GM didn't get it right.
Well, and it's not steer by wire on the old GM.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's the first, not truck, but first vehicle ever to have steer by wire.
Yeah, because there's a Lexus
Infiniti, but it had a rod as a backup. So it was steer by wire, but there was a backup of a traditional, rod going from a steering wheel in case the steer by wire failed. The Cybertruck has no such thing. It's all electronically controlled. And what it allows you to do is it allows you to do things like speed sensitive steering, where the amount of input you put into the steering wheel varies by how fast you're going.
Which means you never really know what's going to happen when you turn the wheel.
It is odd. I grant you that. It allows you to not have to and if you're listening to this, you don't have to go hand over hand. You can just, turn it a little bit and the wheels will turn a lot or a little, depending. If you're going slow, they'll turn more. If you're going fast, they'll turn less.
It does take some getting used to at low speed because you give a small input and it has a big reaction.
It does. So I think that's very innovative. And then the other most innovative thing, I think, is the Hummer EV with a crab walk.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool, too. Not very useful.
No, it's a fun demo in a parking lot if your buddies need something to gawk at.
I loved how when GM introduced that, they had to come up with a rationale for it, right?
Yeah.
And so they were like, let's say you're off-road and there's a big rock in the way and you can't get around it. And you can then use both wheels to kind of shimmy around it as opposed to trying to, do the front wheel steering and then go around it in a more traditional way.
I will say from experience, because we owned a Hummer EV, seldom...
And a Cybertruck.
And a Cybertruck. In that Hummer EV especially, seldom do you have an option for a line to take on an off-road trail because that Hummer EV is about as wide, if not wider, than the majority of off-road trails that we come across.
Yeah, so here is the Chevy commercial demonstrating the use of crab walking in an off-road situation.
I'm not convinced they didn't build these rocks just for this demonstration, because I've never, I don't think we were ever in that situation in the time we owned the Hummer EV.
You know what it's like? For all of you guys who haven't experienced it, it's like being on an ice skating rink.
Yeah.
Because you're going in two directions at the same time, right? So yeah, you're going sideways and forward at the same time.
It's very strange.
Which is very strange indeed.
Now, I can understand why you would select the Hummer EV to an extent, and also the Cybertruck is the most innovative trucks. Because like you said, objectively speaking, whether you like the Cybertruck or not, it does bring a lot of new features and stuff that wasn't available on trucks or even just vehicles in general beforehand. On the flip side of that, I'm not sure that that innovation necessarily made it better at being a truck, because it still suffers from some of the ultimate downfalls that a lot of EV trucks or even just trucks of that kind of configuration have in general, where the bed is only so big. The range, especially when towing, there's limitations to that, and being able to pull up to a charger with a trailer attached, all the stuff that we've beaten to death in other videos in the past. But to your point, there are a lot of new features on that truck. So objectively speaking, it is innovation.
Yeah, so I would say there are kind of two criteria. And right now we're starting with the fun stuff. We'll get to the more serious stuff a little bit later. But there are two kind of criteria. Is it truly innovative, or is it innovative from a marketing standpoint? You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Does it actually make the truck better as a truck?
Easier, yeah.
Or does it make it easier to sell? So I would say crab walk is certainly something that makes
The latter.
Yeah. And steer by wire, I think the jury's still out on that. I don't know if that's going to catch on. If history is any guide, then a lot of the things that Tesla has pioneered, or at least reinvented and then made popular, like door handles that disappear into the body.
Yeah.
That stuff has caught on, and people have kind of in other companies ran with it. Another bit of innovation, and this, of course, isn't the first truck to have it, is a convertible, right? The Hummer EV is a convertible.
Yeah, so you can pull the roof panels off.
Yeah.
I mean, similar to a Jeep Gladiator.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can take those roof panels off. We never did it on ours because it seems like a little bit of a process, and
I was afraid.
Mixed things.
I was
about
afraid because like people who had done it had kind of sacrifice the water tightness.
Yeah, which would have made for an interesting video.
Of their truck.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have helped our resale if every time it got wet.
Yeah, I mean, basically it's like four T-tops.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not exactly like a true convertible where you have a fabric top that you kind of just open with two levers and then throw back.
It is a T-top. It's old school.
Yeah, but there's four of those panels.
Yeah.
And so I think four is also the same Freedom top that comes on the Gladiator is also panels, but there's just two panels. With the Hummer EV, you end up with four panels, but they're also plexiglass, and so you can see through them. So, I mean, it is kind of innovative. So is that something that is marketing, or is it meaningful?
I think most of it is marketing ultimately, unless you place a lot of utility, and it's going to depend person to person. If you place a lot of utility on comfort features, luxury features, having those transparent roof panels and big screens and all that kind of stuff, you could maybe place some utility on that. I think the things that we're discussing that make the Hummer EV and the Cybertruck innovative don't necessarily have a really substantial impact on their ability to work as tools. But it's not to say that they're completely worthless features.
Yeah, and before you diesel truck guys and gals, or Hemi truck
That's
guys
me.
And gals, yeah, yeah, tune out. We're going to get to other stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to get to like tailgates and, all kinds of other cool stuff. But we're talking about electric trucks right now because, let's face it, they have brought a lot of innovation to the truck world. So here's another thing. A 240 kilowatt hour battery. That's how big of a battery. And the Silverado EV also has that massive battery. So really, they were the first to like make, if it's GM, it's trailering, if it's us, it's towing, actually some sort of kind of doable with an electric truck. Is that innovative?
Yeah, I would say so, because one test that Andre and I did, we had the Silverado EV up against a regular combustion powered pickup truck, and we did a towing range test, and the Silverado EV, when I was behind the wheel, we did over 230 miles pulling a trailer Don't remember exactly what the weight was. I want to say maybe around 8,000 pounds. So we were able to tow a pretty substantial difference. That still doesn't address the difficulties of charging when you're hooked up to a trailer, because most, like we said, most charging stations aren't really set up for that. But 230 miles of range towing a trailer is really not bad.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I just had the Silverado EV, and it was the first electric vehicle where I had no range anxiety, because it'll do like 400
unladen,
without, you know, towing. And the same thing could be said for the Rivian. Now, the Rivian pickup has brought a lot of innovation, and I think people forget just how much innovation. And the first thing they did was put that cool tunnel, right, through the truck, where you could like store your gear or store your, you know, fishing rods or all kinds of cool stuff. And I'm wonder if that's because it was electric or because nobody thought of doing that before. So in a gas truck, can you do that same kind
of I actually know of a truck that has a gear tunnel similar to that.
Yeah.
Smaller.
Yeah.
But one of the vehicles I learned how to drive on when I was a kid was a Dodge M37. So it was a military version of the old Dodge Power Wagon. And that had a little compartment you could open up in that same location on the bed right behind the cab, and it went all the way through to the other side where there was another opening. So kind of similar to what you see there on the Rivian.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, there's nothing new in this world, Shakespeare.
Yeah.
So people have already done this, but there's a gear tunnel. And initially when the Rivian came out, they actually had like a camping kitchen that you could pre-order. And I think what happened was it was just too hard and too expensive, because even when it came out, it was like $7,000 if you wanted the camping kitchen. But basically for like Overlanders, they had a little kitchen that lived in that slot that would slide out, and then you would have like a cooker and, you know, probably even water, like a little faucet. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Unfortunately, they never did that. The other thing that they did, which, oh, there's a camping kitchen. Yeah. Was that cool?
Yeah, it is cool. It's a good idea.
I wish they had done it.
I know. It would have been, I can understand why it would be a difficult thing to actually bring to fruition, but it is a really cool concept.
Now, forever, Rolls-Royce has had an umbrella in the door. And Rivian took it to the next step by doing a flashlight that was also rechargeable. So when you put it back in the door, I think that's pretty cool. Now, that may be marketing, but I think that's pretty darn useful. I think every truck should have a flashlight. There's so many times when, you know, like we're coming back from towing and it's gotten dark and now I'm trying to unhook the trailer and...
Yeah, you're working with your straps and it's dark. And
it'd be so handy, because the problem is you could stick a flashlight in the vehicle.
Yeah.
But you'll forget to charge it, or the battery will die, or it'll get lost. Whereas this thing has a home and a charging port. It's really cool.
Well, and other brands are starting to catch on to some of those kind of features, because some of the new 4Runners, for example, you open up the door and right on the side of the dashboard, you can undo a little puck that is a portable light that charges off the vehicle, which is pretty cool. And then the same thing on the Toyotas. You have a portable speaker that pops out of the dash.
Ours has it. Our new 4Runner has that little speaker,
And I believe Rivian had the same thing.
They have the speaker. I think it's under the front seat.
Yeah. Now, those are kind of
minor
things, but still pretty nice to have.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that the Rivian had, which was not innovative but unique, and it came, I think, from the Honda, was that in the bed there was a little cubby compartment, and you could actually put a spare tire into the cubby compartment. So under the bed, normally in a traditional pickup truck, the spare tire lives underneath, right? Then you have this like hole that you stick and then you crank it down. Well, here they put the spare tire basically in the compartment of the bed. And I think the reason that electric trucks can be more innovative is because basically they don't have an engine, right? So you have a frunk. That's another innovation. And so you have the skateboard with the batteries along the bottom, and it gives you a lot more kind of room to play with to do cool things like putting the spare tire, you know, in the bed. But the problem with that was, I remember we had one initially, and I could not figure out how the hell I would pull that out of that bed. Well, it's easier to lower one than to lift it up, right? Because they're heavy.
The other thing, too, is that if you're using your bed, if you've got a lot of stuff in the bed and you get a flat, then you're going to have to unpack the entire bed to get at it.
Yeah, if you've got a couple dirt bikes in there, no problem. But if you've got, you know, 500 pounds worth of rocks.
Yeah, or if you're on a big overlanding trip and every bit of your gear... Like, let's say you have something like a decked system with drawers, you know, you'd have to uninstall that basically to get at your tire. One cool thing, though, also in the bed of the Rivian, was an air chuck for you to hook into the compressor, because it's got an air suspension system.
Yeah.
So it might as well let you tap into that.
Yeah. Toyota does that in the
Trail Hunter.
In the Trail Hunter. It's got an onboard compressor.
Yeah, which is cool. That's a good, useful, genuinely useful bit of innovation.
All right, here's a bit of trivia. What was the first car that we owned that had that feature where it had an onboard compressor and you could plug it in and you could fill up? In this car, you could fill up your tires, obviously, but it was more to do with, like, I don't know, like basketballs or
was this a vehicle that we owned since I've been here?
It was before you were here.
Oh, before my time. Yeah. It's going to be something weird like your Tatra or...
No, it was weird, no. But it wasn't that weird.
Not that weird?
Starts with an A.
With an A.
Ends with a tech. Has a Z in the middle.
Oh, the Pontiac? No way.
The Aztec, yeah.
The Pontiac Aztec, for as much grief as it gets, that is a vehicle that continues to impress us with some of its cool features. Because you could have like a refrigerator, right?
There was a little cooler.
Yeah.
Basically, that was your armrest. And you can unhook the cooler. And here's the crazy thing, Case. I know this is not a truck thing, but it is cool. So we bought an Aztec, right?
Yeah.
A long time ago. There it is.
Oh, look, a young Tommy.
A young Tommy. So we bought that Aztec. And... this is one of the early ones because you can tell it's got body color cladding.
Yeah.
I remember when it was first introduced, and for all of you older folk out there, you might remember that Pontiac unveiled the Aztec during a show called Survivor. Have you ever watched Survivor?
I've heard of it.
It's a show where you're on an island, right? And then you got to
voted off the island.
Yeah, yeah. And then if you won that, you got an Aztec.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And the way that you got an Aztec was because it was very uncomfortable to sleep in the island. You could sleep in the Aztec and you could
with the tent.
And so
you guys had the tent, didn't you?
Yeah, but the tent was almost more expensive than the Aztec itself.
Oh, here you go. You guys are setting up the tent right there. So for those who don't know or for those who are listening, the Pontiac Aztec, you could get from the factory with a tent that was designed and shaped around the back of the vehicle so that you could camp out of the back of it. It's kind of cool. Actually.
Oh, there was,
just saw the air truck.
Yeah, and the thing about the tent was, you know, it didn't come automatically with it, so it was like an accessory that you could buy for it. And people who ordered it obviously didn't sell it with the car, and so we had to go on eBay and buy it. I think at that time I paid like $1,000 for the Aztec. I want to say the tent was $500.
Yeah, but a worthwhile expense.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the cool things about that car.
Yeah, but if you're an Aztec lover, you got to have the removable.
Got to have the tent.
And the cooler.
Yeah.
and the compressor. That, you know, it's funny. Some of these cars that had a lot of innovation actually never succeeded. And the same could be said for the Cybertruck. Right now, you could lay odds whether that thing's going to be a success or not.
It's not looking too bright as far as how successful it's going to be versus their initial predictions. But there are a few vehicles, trucks specifically, coming out that we are very excited about and that are going to bring a great deal of innovation. And I think one that we have our eye on is the new Scout.
Yeah, we've got an order actually placed for one, as does every other YouTuber in the world.
Yeah.
And of course, we've got the one with the range extender.
Yeah, as most people have. It's the majority of people who
80%,
have,
I think.
Yeah, put in orders for these Scouts that are doing the range extended version. So if you're not aware, this is an electric-driven pickup truck, but it will have a gasoline-powered range extender, which is nice. It's kind of arguably the best of both worlds.
Yeah, hopefully. I was listening to your podcast last time. Hopefully it won't set your house on fire like your Volt did.
Or tried to.
Go back and listen to that podcast, guys, if you want to hear a fun story about...
A bad story about a Chevy Volt.
Because basically that was, in a way, also a range-extended vehicle. It wasn't quite, but it's...
Yeah, because I think that engine could drive the wheels under certain conditions. So a little different from what we're going to see with the Scout. But a few exciting things about the Scout is this is going to be a bit of a more traditional kind of platform. So it's actually going to have a solid rear axle, which is a pretty big deal. And things that are a little old school like that, you know, it's the kind of stuff that we talk about a lot, and it maybe seems like it's not strictly necessary. But from what we've seen, the old school mechanical components like actual mechanical locking differentials, like solid axles, like body-on-frame construction, really does make a difference when you go out and hit the trail.
Yeah, I will get to that in a second because obviously trucks for the longest time have been body-on-frame, but recently with like the Tesla with the exoskeleton and with the Ridgeline where it's unibody construction. By the way, those unibody trucks have been around like since the 60s. It's, you know,
yeah.
This is nothing new. And people don't oftentimes consider those as trucks, but there's also another range extender that's coming, right?
Yeah, from Ram.
From Ram, yeah. So Ram is doing the Ram Rev.
Yeah.
No, the Charger. Is it the Charger?
Ram Charger.
They've changed names a couple times. It's exactly opposite of what you would think. You would think the Charger would be the electric truck and the Rev would be the range extender, right? Range extended vehicle, Rev. Yeah. But the Charger is the range extender.
They've made it confusing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so there's a couple range extended trucks coming, which again, potentially this could be the best of both worlds, a situation where you get that power and that instant torque that we love with EV trucks, because whenever we're towing with an EV truck, range is obviously one of the big downsides, but acceleration and capability when you do have charge is great. So the electric powertrain for that purpose, really nice. And then if you can just bring in the range element of having that range extender in there, that could be a really good combination.
But I think it's trickier than people think. Now, we of course also owned a BMW i3,
yep,
which was the first true range extended vehicle, right?
Yeah.
The way that worked is because the EPA wanted to make sure that people wouldn't be using it as a gasoline-powered vehicle, the battery would be used, and then once the battery died, it had a little 600cc Kymco motorcycle powertrain. And I've told the story again, so I won't bore people with it, but the first time I ran out of juice, I was driving up I-70 right by Idaho Springs, and by the time I got to Loveland Pass, dude, I was doing like 12 miles an hour, I was doing like 35 on I-70. So you need a big powertrain, internal combustion engine, to power that battery if you're going to be doing it for a truck, especially a truck that's towing. So maybe I think Pentastar is what Ram is talking about as the powertrain. And then that, of course, just begs the question, why do you even need the battery? Right? You just have a Pentastar power truck.
Yeah, it'll remain to be seen. This is a configuration, a style of truck that we still have to get hitched up to a trailer and see how they perform when these start to come out. Definitely going to be something exciting and something that we're looking forward to over the next couple of years, because whenever we're able to test something that is genuinely very new, then that makes for a lot of video opportunities for us. So it's exciting. One thing that I do like, and it's not only on electric trucks or range extended electric trucks, but also hybrid systems like Ford Power Boost models, is the ability to tap into some of the power on those batteries to use to run tools, even run something as substantial as a welder, charge up somebody else's electric vehicle that might have died somewhere. That is a genuinely useful bit of innovation.
Yeah, I mean, Ford's onboard power is definitely a game changer. Now, we've actually powered a house with it. Do you remember?
Yeah.
We did a video when Andre had his hybrid EcoBoost, which puts out, he'd know, but I think it's 7.2.
Yeah, 7.2 kilowatts in total.
And that big old V6 twin turbo can generate a lot of electricity. And so we hooked up to a house and actually powered a house with it.
Yeah, we also welded off of it.
And you know what's interesting?
Awesome.
There's a video where we're powering the house. You know, it's interesting that more people haven't done that. Because like even today, most pickup trucks will have that 400 watt, 120 volt, you know, plug in the bed.
Yeah.
But that thing is useless, right? You're not going to power a chainsaw
things, but you're not.
Yeah, like a
you're
laptop.
You're not going to run something hefty off of it.
No, nothing that uses, you know, like chainsaws or any
you're
kind
of. You're definitely not going to weld off of that.
No. And Ford pioneered that now. It must be 10 years ago or close to it. And yet it's something that I thought would be pretty common on many trucks today. And yet we still have that useless little plug back there that I don't understand. And you don't necessarily need, I guess you do need a hybrid because you need a battery, right? So even if it's a small battery, you need a battery to be able to use that engine to power the battery, which then plugs into your house or whatever it is.
Yeah, but that's a really useful feature and something too that, you know, it's great to see on the F-150 Lightning or on the F-150 Power Boost, but to see something like that in an HD truck, which is what a lot of people are using at job sites and using to do really heavy lifts, that would be really nice. They have brought some onboard power into like the Ford HD trucks, but it's not nearly what you can get out of some of those F-150 models that we mentioned. So seeing more of that across truck lineups, that would be a really actually genuinely useful bit of innovation to see moving forward.
Now let's kind of separate what we're talking about, which is basically a hybrid truck that uses this internal combustion engine to generate electricity, to two things that you can get. Well, we had a Lightning, so you could get we actually installed this, but we never got to use it because it never was actually functional. And the same thing at my house for the Cybertruck, because they finally came to actually install the bi-directional power. So the Cybertruck comes with a unit that lets you charge the truck, but then it also hooks up to your house's power supply. So theoretically, if it all works, you can use the Cybertruck to plug into your house. So if there's a power outage, it will power your house.
Yeah.
So it could be for up to a week if the battery's full, because that thing has 120 kilowatt hour battery, I think.
It's a big battery.
It's a big battery. And so Ford kind of tried it and it really didn't work. And now, we're trying to do the same thing at my house with the Cybertruck, even though the Cybertruck is gone. But anyway, we paid the price for it, so we might as well have it.
Install it.
Yeah. But if I'm not mistaken, Case, I want to say that way back at the beginning of electrified vehicles, the Leaf had the CHAdeMO standard, which was also bidirectional. So in Japan, I think you could plug your Leaf into your home. It was never activated here in America because, of course, the Leaf didn't have a very big battery, and that standard is now pretty slow in terms of charging.
Yeah.
But I think CHAdeMO is also bidirectional. So I think we are hitting into a world where there's a whole bunch of possibilities. So as you know, okay, the grid, right? The grid is this like live creature.
Yeah.
And people are putting power into it. People are taking power out of it. And there's really no way to store power. So one of the things that's happening in America and the rest of the world is that, people are putting utilities are putting giant batteries in the grid, so that if you have like solar or wind power or something that isn't on all the time, you can store power and use it for when you need it. And then, of course, you can also do the same thing with vehicles that are parked and plugged into the grid at your house. So you could use that as a power supply for the grid. So
as most people know, you can also do that as an individual in your own home. If you want to get a big battery pack and fix it to the wall, then you can store power for when you need
Tesla,
it.
Tesla power,
they're very expensive.
$10,000 for, at least last time I checked, they were $10,000 for 10 kilowatts.
But what you're talking about is basically using the vehicle instead in place of those big batteries that you would fix to the wall. It would have essentially the same purpose, where you could power your house off of it.
Yeah, or better yet, it could also, if you had enough of them, the utility could use it to store electricity. So when the grid has more demand, it could power the grid from your truck. So it doesn't just have to power your house, it could also power the grid. So you have basically backup for the grid. I mean, these are things that are all possible under the current, Trump administration. None of it's going to happen because we're going to be, going back to coal. I'm serious, right? That's where we're heading. But in the rest of the world, this is stuff that actually is more than just, a great idea or maybe a bad idea. I don't know. That people are tossing about. Anyway, let's get back to trucks and talk about some more innovation. We keep getting back to electric trucks, dude.
Yeah, well, because there is a lot there. And again, I mean, on the hybrid side of things, being able to power stuff off your bed, I like that a lot. There's other innovation, though, I think we've seen, or I don't even know if I would call it innovation, developments maybe, that I'm not quite as keen on.
I'll give you a bad one.
Yeah?
Yeah, e-lockers.
Yeah, e-lockers don't work. That's back to electric trucks. Yeah. But
Hummer EV, Rivian, they're getting better, but there is nothing.
It just doesn't. It basically doesn't do anything.
Yeah. So what's supposed to happen is it's supposed to simulate a regular locker, right? And a locker basically allows you to power all two wheels or four wheels. And if you've got, let's say, 100% of energy, if you've got a front, middle, a triple lock vehicle, then each wheel gets 25%.
Yeah.
And so they're all spinning. With e-lockers, the theory is like a Hummer EV and a Cyber Beast has a traditional locker and then an e-locker. And the idea is that e-locker works as a regular locker, but it doesn't.
No, it basically doesn't do anything.
The computer like tells it to send power to whichever wheel has traction. And in our experience, when we've been in the snow and none of the wheels have traction, you can floor the thing and you're just sitting there with nothing happening.
Another innovation that I'm not quite as keen on, and I'm not sure that this is necessarily controversial, but it's the downsizing of engines into turbo powertrains, because we've done some back-to-back MPG testing with a Coyote V8 powered F-150 and an EcoBoost powered F-150, or a Hurricane powered Ram and a 5.7 Hemi powered Ram. And the difference in fuel economy, power is another thing. A new Hurricane high output Ram 1500 makes quite a bit more power than an old 5.7. But as far as MPG goes, really not as substantial of a difference as we would hope for. It's definitely not reason enough in the MPG front to want to switch.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to that old saying, right, with EcoBoost. You can either have Eco, in that case, good fuel economy, or you can have Boost in power.
Yeah.
And this promise of both is not true.
No. So the older V8s, they really, as far as fuel economy goes, I don't think that that's necessarily a reason to count them out, which maybe means that we'll see some more V8s in the future. That's not up to us. So
here's a question. I don't know if this is true because of the way that the dealer network works, but I've read, and I think I'm not off on this, and if I am, please correct me, Ford. I've read that only 10% of Fords are equipped with the Coyote V8.
And I believe it. Anecdotally, just looking around at the trucks that you see out on the road, it's...
So why is that? Why aren't, if people love V8 so much, you would think that 90% of the Fords would be V8s, and yet the minority of them are V8s.
Yeah, it's hard to say. There's definitely an audience for V8 trucks out there, and I think GM has demonstrated that because they've got pretty huge sales figures.
Two V8s, 5.3, 6.2. Yeah.
And their sales figures are huge, and the majority of that is not the 3-liter Duramax.
No.
On their full-size trucks. So.
And speaking of that, that's another cool innovation, right? The small, full-size, half-ton diesels, those weren't around until recently. So both Ram, Jeep.
Ram had the Eco Diesel.
Yeah,
Jeep. Yeah, there was the little Power Stroke too. But now we're just down to the 3-liter Duramax if you want a full-size truck with a diesel. Not such a bad thing, because that 3-liter Duramax is actually a really great engine. It's not the fastest thing in the world, but good fuel economy, quiet, it's refined.
It's a good engine. I love that little diesel.
Yeah.
And I remember like when diesels were forbidden fruits for mid-sized trucks. And then, of course, the Titan came along with the Cummins.
Yeah.
And that proved to be a kind of a disaster, unfortunately.
Yeah, not the best engine.
And I think what happened was, it wasn't the diesel per se that killed a lot of the midsize and full-size diesels. It was the fact that the diesel engines that they put into these trucks were not very good.
Yeah.
Right. So the first Eco Diesel in the Ram, right? That
had issues. Yeah.
Yeah. That they got fined and.
Well, and the Titan was also interesting too from a marketing standpoint, because you had the regular Titan and then you had the Titan XD, and that was somewhere in between a full size and an
HD tweener
truck.
It was weird, yeah.
So not to say that it didn't have any usefulness, but it was, I think, a difficult thing for people who are used to pretty rigid truck categories to kind of wrap their heads around.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, the Eco Diesel, that first generation, I think Ram got caught doing what Volkswagen did, is that they promised that they were clean and that they were fuel efficient. And they were fuel efficient.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to do both with a diesel.
And then they also weren't very reliable. And, you know, diesels are known for being able to go.
Durability. A big side of it.
And one of the biggest problems, of course, with diesel engines, no matter what size, is they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're expensive to maintain.
Yeah, because like the new Ram HDs are going to be coming out. And we're looking at around about, so there's not going to be two different options for a Cummins engine on the upcoming Ram. There's not going to be a standard output and a high output. One engine, it's got pretty high output, I believe 470 horsepower and 1,075 pound-feet of torque. So good numbers. That's a $12,000 option.
Yeah. So
that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we end up buying the Duramax in our HD Silverado 2500 instead of the Ford Super Duty was because the Duramax is a $10,000 option, whereas the Power Stroke is a $12,000
option. Yeah, the high output High output power stroke is very expensive.
Yes.
And also a lot of output, 500 horsepower, 1,200 pound-feet of torque.
And that's another innovation, right? You remember when trucks could barely tow 15,000 pounds?
Yeah.
And then we had this incredible war of horsepower and torque, horsepower and torque, horsepower and torque, right? And it seemed like we got a press release every day, right? That the Ford is now the best in class and it can tow 16,000. And Ram came out and said, oh, our Cummins can tow 18,000. And now you're up to like big rig towing numbers, right? You could tow 30,000 pounds with a pickup truck.
A 450 Ford claims can tow 40,000. That they did a little bit of finagling to get that number, because I think that specific truck they did to do that, they pulled the spare tire out of it. They did a couple kind of wonky things to get that 40,000 number.
I think I remember like they even pulled like the bumper out of it or something like that.
They did some crazy stuff.
They definitely lightened the payload.
The seats out of it or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. But yeah.
It was not a stock truck.
No. It wasn't exactly legit. But still, even close to 40,000 pounds is a crazy amount of towing capability to get out of any new truck.
You have to be like Andre and have a CDL almost.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, to be able to tow that much.
The other thing that's kind of funny is Andre and I want to say maybe on the last truck podcast, at least the last one that I did with him, we were looking at a 2002, so a late model second gen Cummins, and there was a picture of the Monroney for this truck, really nice truck, but it showed the power output, and that was 245 horsepower, 505 pound-feet of torque. You think about that now in today's context, when you can get a power stroke high output with 500 horsepower, 1,200 pound-feet of torque. Yeah, like you're saying, as far as innovation goes, power, not an issue on today's trucks, especially the big diesels.
Yeah, and then not just power, but it's also like comfort. Now, you've got that old Cummins, right?
Yeah, 12-valve.
That's a truck, man. That is a traditional truck. You know, you can smell that thing start up in the office from the outside. You can hear it.
Smell it through walls, yeah.
And we've had some of those Rams, and, you know, they're pretty bare bones, right?
Yeah.
Whereas we just drove our new Duramax to California and back. And Case, I mean, that is as luxurious as any 7 Series or S-Class Mercedes.
Yeah, and you can barely tell that there's a trailer behind it, because some of those trucks are closing in on 8,000 pounds, their curb weight. So it's a little understandable. You understand why they feel so solid and stable and everything. And you also get nice features now from the factory on trucks, like an exhaust brake. That's a really big deal. All these additional gears in the transmission, 8 speeds, 10 speeds, those kind of things. Again, when you're towing, having all those extra gears, really nice stuff to have.
Yeah, and you also get quiet, which yours isn't, right?
Not at all.
like I was amazed at how quiet that new Silverado is. And I was talking to Tommy, and I said the biggest difference between our old Cummins, which isn't all that old, right? It's a current generation until the new one comes out. And this Duramax is that the Cummins felt very trucky. You still had a little bit of that kind of diesel clatter, and you can kind of hear the exhaust brake. Chevy, you could be inside the most luxurious, most comfy Rolls Royce. That's how quiet it is. I'm guessing that decibel level is maybe in the 60s. It's incredible. And then every creature comfort you can think of, right? We don't have everyone, but you can get massaging seats, heated and cooled seats, heated steering wheel, heads-up display. I mean, you know, everything you could think of that you could put in a Rolls Royce, you could now get in a truck. And that's another innovation, which is not a welcome one, and that is trucks exceeding $100,000.
Yeah, so I think there's two sides of that. I'm sure there's several other people out there in the world like myself that buy a diesel truck and kind of like hearing some of the diesel noises that it makes. But the other side of it, to your point, yeah, there is tons of comfort and features and everything coming into trucks. They're as luxurious as a lot of any vehicle category that you can spec up that's out there on the market. But to your point, yeah, trucks are getting very, very expensive, as we've talked about at length.
I remember when the Hummer EV came out and Chevy priced it at $119,000, if I remember right. And I thought to myself, these guys are crazy. You're crazy. I was like, you guys are crazy. And now
there's several trucks in that price category.
Raptor R, $110,000. When we bought our TRX, we had the base one, the lowest.
Yeah, we didn't even have like keyless entry on ours.
No, I was 73, I think, at the time. Yeah. Which brings another innovation, and that is trucks that basically are off-road monsters.
Absolutely, yeah. Trucks with selectable lockers, trucks with long travel, you know, live valve suspension, trucks with serious skid plating underneath. It's amazing in today's world how capable of an off-road truck you can buy turnkey from the factory ready to go.
Yeah, this was stuff that in the 70s, you could only dream. You can get a high boy, right? That was like, I got myself an off-road truck. But that was as far as it went. I mean, look at like the Colorado AE or the AEV.
The ZR2.
To Bison or the AEV version of that, right? Front locker, rear locker, multimatic suspension, right?
Yeah.
Formula One technology.
Spool valve, DSSV.
Yeah. And then Ford really does the Ranger Raptor, which for $57,000 is just a bargain of an off-road truck.
Box live valve suspension, front and rear lockers.
Yeah, heated and cooled seats. Yeah.
Also, with the $800 Ford Performance tune we've got on it, we're over 500 pound-feet of torque on that Ranger Raptor, so it's properly fast, too.
And look, there's the Chevy. Look at what it's doing. I mean, you could only dream of that not that long ago, and now from the factory you could basically get yourself a completely either rock ready, rock crawling ready, or Baja ready truck. It's incredible.
Trucks that they tell you from the factory have the ability to jump and land a jump, and there's no risk to the frame as long as the jump is within reason. Probably don't want to jump a football stadium.
Well, Street Speed found out that
there's limits to that.
That when you have a big V8 supercharged chunk of metal in the front, they become lawn darts.
they plunge the nose into the dirt.
Yes, as opposed to the tires.
limitations to that. But again, the GM trucks, like you said, a lot of the AEV versions that you can get with AEV steel bumpers from the factory, you can get a brand new Power Stroke with a winch in the bumper from the factory that's crash rated, and it's rated for proper cooling for that engine and everything. It's all within warranty, and it's designed to do it. It's really impressive stuff.
Yeah, and then there's a couple head scratchers. I'm going to give you two head scratchers, okay? The first one, as you know, is the fact that Chevy actually never competed against the Raptor. So the Raptor, when it came out, which is, 2010 or something, 2009, I mean, it was a hit out of the ballpark, slam hit. And, Chevy had the ZR... The Silverado?
Yeah, the ZR2.
The ZR2, yeah. They had the ZR2, but it never had the three things you need for an off-road super truck. So it didn't have the bigger engine.
Yeah.
So it had the 6.2, but it wasn't as powerful as the Ford Raptor engine. And they never actually went and played in that world, right? They didn't compete.
Do a long travel suspension wide body truck.
Right, yeah. Like the TRX or the Raptor or Raptor R, which is the first head scratcher. And the other head scratcher is something I completely forgot about. You're way ahead of me on that.
No, but I agree. And it would have been cool to see GM play a little bit in that category. There are some aftermarket brands that chose to do so, make their own kind of wide body versions.
I mean, they did it in the midsize truck.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they killed it in the midsize truck, but they just never played in that full size truck, which is, I think, where much of kind of truck cred comes from.
Yeah, right, definitely.
Because a midsize truck is popular, but the full-size truck is more popular.
In the off-road world, a lot of the conversation has been, was when these trucks were just coming out and were even more popular, Raptor R versus TRX. You know, that was a big deal for a while. GM wasn't really in that conversation. That's not
They might say Hummer EV, but it really doesn't.
Yeah, it's just kind of a different thing, being fully electric versus these big, bad, fuel-burning, fire-breathing, wide-body trucks. Yeah. And, that's not to say that the Silverado ZR2 or, the Sierra AT4X, that those don't belong in the conversation off-road, because selectable front and rear lockers, that's something that the TRX and the Raptor don't have, selectable lockers, front and rear. That's a big deal for a rock crawler. And also, there are a lot of situations, especially out here in Colorado and through the trees, where a narrower truck is actually helpful, because ultimately the TRX and the Raptor are kind of desert trucks.
I'm going to say something controversial, because that's what I do. I will wager that the best Raptor, there's four Raptors, right? Bronco Raptor, Raptor R,
it's
Raptor
obvious. Raptor. It's the Raptor R.
It's the Ranger Raptor.
Actually, you know what? Value because of considered?
Value and what you just said.
Yeah.
Right? It's the most affordable.
Yeah.
It's the easiest to live with.
It's not the best sounding Raptor, but what I'll say is that
it's not that.
As far as performance and off-road capability, not talking on-road capability or towing capability or anything so much, but as far as performance, acceleration, and off-road capability for
57,000
for about half the money of a Raptor R, this to me gets 80% of what the Raptor R gets you.
Well, look, it's like even like Formula One, right? Or any motorsports, lightness is better both on road and off road.
I would pick this as a rock crawler over the Raptor R,
except for those steps.
The side steps, yeah, could be improved, but it's a genuinely really good rock crawler. It's probably 90-95% as good of a rock crawler as a Gladiator Rubicon.
Yeah, and you know,
and much better high speed.
We don't usually keep our vehicles all that long because you guys get bored of our videos after like a dozen of them. And yet we still have the Ranger Raptor, and it's going to be a year. It's such a good truck. It's just hard to get rid of it because it's such a useful thing. And it works not just off-road. It works on-road. It works in any, you know, the only thing it doesn't do really is tow a heck of a lot. But then,
and it's a small bed.
It's a small bed, yeah.
There's no getting around those. So it's not the best truck for doing truck things, but if you need a truck that you can use mostly to go off-road, but also to be comfortable on-road and be quick from stoplight to stoplight, if that matters to you, man, the Ranger Raptor is just so good at those things.
All right, well, let's talk about another innovation in the truck world. There's a lot of innovations, Case. I didn't realize this before we started this. All right, the new category that both Hyundai and Ford created, and that's the compact truck. And I think, I'm not sure they created it. I mean, the problem is that trucks keep getting bigger and bigger. So once upon a time, today's compact truck was yesterday's midsize truck.
Yeah.
But still, they did create this new category of mini trucks. If you're from the 70s, compact trucks. If you're today,
kind of a new style of mini trucks because they're four door.
Yeah. Yeah. The original mini trucks were two door.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's almost a bit of a crossover with a bed, especially with the Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I was talking to Ford. It's interesting. They said that they're trying to convert car buyers into truck buyers with the Maverick.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense, right? Because it's basically built on an Escape.
Yeah. Or a Bronco Sport.
Built on Escape. Yeah. So the platform is the Escape. So now we're talking unibody, right? We're not talking body and frame. And they Ford smartly engineered two vehicles off that frame or off that chassis. The Escape was selling fairly well, but it was getting killed in the marketplace by the CR-V and the RAV4. And so by creating the Bronco Sport and the Maverick, they just really boosted sales. And the other smart thing they did, and this is unfortunately gone, but when that came out, the front-wheel drive version was $19,000.
Yeah, now 19,000. The base is more around 27.
$25,000 for the front wheel if you want the all-wheel.
Yeah.
You go like 27.
It's gotten quite a bit more expensive, the Maverick has, than it used to be. We bought an all-wheel drive hybrid Maverick, which didn't used to be an option, so that's a nice thing to have. So we still get pretty good fuel economy, especially around the city, not as much.
Yeah,
so
it's been freaking cold here.
Yeah.
So if you look at the truck, Monroney, it says 37 combined.
Yeah.
We're getting 34.
Yeah, so but is once there, it's is, more broken in.
But is there a more fuel-efficient truck out there? I mean, you can argue that the electric trucks are more fuel-efficient, but let's put those aside. I would say the Maverick is the most fuel-efficient truck.
Yeah, that I can think of.
Yeah, because the Santa Cruz is 21 or 22 combined.
Yeah. Yeah, so Maverick is really a good little truck. It's useful. The interior materials quality is not the best. The design is cool. It's a good-looking interior.
Well, and that was fine when it was 19,000.
Yeah.
The problem is now it's not.
Yeah, so arguably not the best value. You could maybe get a bit more value as far as features and interior materials and everything out of a Santa Cruz than the Maverick. But still, this is a really useful little truck. And I actually, locally, I see, again, this is kind of anecdotal, but I see a lot of Mavericks being used as work trucks.
You know what's crazy? Like, since we got the truck, you know how it is when you like get something and then you're like, I wonder if there's more of them around, and you see them everywhere.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Mavericks. Like, they're so innocuous that you don't realize.
Notice them necessarily.
And then once you drive down the road, you're like, wait, that security vehicle is a Maverick.
Yep.
That advanced auto is a Maverick, right? What I love about our Maverick, and I've been driving it now for the last month. I've put on 2,500 miles, and I've really fallen in love with it, is that it's a trucky truck. Now, nothing wrong with the Santa Cruz. That is a crossover with a bed.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. It's just a cross with the bed. The Maverick is a trucky truck. And even though ours, because we got a little goofy with the, with, you know, we got heated seats and we had to get the XLT, not the XL. So we got ours up to like 36,000, which is, you know, starting at where like a Ranger would start.
Yeah.
Right. It's midsize. But, I mean, like, I don't care about throwing the dog in there. I don't care about getting dirt in there because it's just, you know, the materials aren't great. Yeah. And you don't feel bad about getting it dirty or parking it somewhere where it might be a little sketch. You know what I mean? You just feel like it's just a tool, which modern trucks are anything but.
Yeah, have in a lot of categories kind of moved away from. And the Maverick is definitely a useful little vehicle. It's thrifty in a lot of ways, especially with fuel. And you can still haul stuff around with it. Andre and I towed with it up the Ike. It actually did a pretty good job.
4,000? So, is that right? It's got a 4,000?
Yeah.
At least a hybrid all-wheel drive. And the bummer about it, I keep harping on this, but I'm still bummed that we couldn't get the FX4 or the Tremor in the hybrid. You can only, it's basically a street truck. And speaking of street trucks, Case, how about the Lobo? Cole, can you find a Lobo?
Yeah, also pretty cool.
That's a brand new category. Well, it's a brand new category. I mean, the Lightning's been, I'm not talking about the electric Lightning, I'm talking about
the old Lightning. Yeah.
And
SVT Lightning.
And the SRT with the Viper, you know, powertrain.
SRT 10.
Yeah, that's been around as well.
Yeah, it seems like we're seeing maybe a potential resurgence of street style trucks because the style has been off-road trucks for a long time. We're maybe seeing a little bit of a comeback for some of these street trucks.
Yeah, and so the Lobo is slammed. It's lowered instead of lifted.
Got cool wheels.
Yeah, and I think what's really cool about it is it's got the same 8-speed transmission as ours has a CVT or planetary gear set. But if you did have the traditional transmission, I think they get rid of second gear. So it's still there, but it goes from first to third, I think, if I remember right, so that you get quicker accelerating times. But I am super excited to go drive that. Unfortunately, Andre's going to drive it. Are you going with him?
I think it's going to be me and Cole going on that. Because
Andre, you're going on it. Cool.
Yeah, Andre signed up for the event to get our position on wave one so we can be there right at the beginning of the program. But I believe that's going to be me in several weeks.
Really?
Yeah, that's the last trip. I've got 7 weeks in a row of press trips. Well, I guess one of those weeks we're going to be going to Moab. That's a company trip instead of a press trip. But I've got 7 weeks in a row of trips out of town, and the last one is going to be the Maverick.
Really?
Yep.
Well, good for you, man. I'm jealous because I'm really curious what the Lobo is going to be like because it's going to be the new Maverick, which we have, but it's also going to be the Lobo.
Yeah, so it's going to feel quite a bit different from the Maverick that we've got. But again, it's pretty cool to be seeing a little resurgence of these street-style trucks.
All right, well, let's talk about tailgates.
We have to.
So once upon a time, a tailgate was a piece of metal that stuck onto the back of a truck and then fold down, and you could throw stuff in there, and then you'd fold it back up, and that was the end of it.
That's still how mine is.
Yeah, that's how yours is on your Cummins, right?
Yeah.
But not anymore. Now you've got tailgates that are barn style. So they don't split in the middle, but they, you know, Ram does this.
Yeah, they can open two different ways.
Yeah, Ridgeline does you can fold it or you can pull
swing it,
Pull it open. Then you've got the one that the professional, the pro, right? The Chevy does that actually.
The multi-pro
turns into steps.
Yeah, it can fold down several different ways. It's something that. Maybe I underestimate how useful it is. My truck is much older. I've never lived with one of these tailgates, so I see it and kind of shrug my shoulders at it. Maybe I don't know what I'm missing. Let me know in the comments below. If you have one of these tailgates and it's a really big game changer for you, then I could be wrong. To me, it feels a little gimmicky.
Some of the things, like the multi-pro tailgate, if you get the really expensive one.
It's got speakers
in it. Yeah, that seems a little gimmicky. But the fact that it folds back a little bit and then folds up, right? So you could put longer bits of lumber or longer 2x4s in there without having to have the tailgate down.
I mean, I got an 8-foot bed, so.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, you got an 8-foot bed. Granted. And then there's little cubby holes that now they're putting into trucks, right? So Ram does that little Ram box on the side.
I do like that Ford has a ruler in a couple things on the tailgate. That's just a smart thing to hold in there.
And bottle openers.
Well, and the other thing that I do like, that's maybe a questionable idea, but one thing I do like, though, is a locking tailgate. My tailgate on my truck doesn't lock, and I have a tunnel cover. My tunnel cover is fabric.
How about electric tailgates or
Yeah, they can keep that.
You don't like that? You can opens and closes?
There's nothing wrong with my arms.
Okay, all right.
You know, I can use them.
How about if it's, what's that called, where it doesn't slam down? It's got like
The dampens?
The dampens.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
All right, let's talk about another bit of innovation that kind of, this is the other head scratcher. I finally remembered it. So remember the Power Wagon?
I do.
And Nathan, Power Wagon don't care, right? That was the first, I shouldn't say the first, but it was certainly the most popular and the most recognizable heavy-duty off-road truck.
Yeah.
And we kept asking Ram, like, hey, when are you going to put the diesel into it, right? And they were like, can't do it.
Just won't do it.
It's too heavy. And then Ford came and beat him to the punch.
Right? Yeah,
they came
with a Tremor.
With a Tremor.
They and now there is the HD Diesel Rebel.
Yes.
And, of course, GM has, you know, their AEV HD trucks, which are also pretty capable. So, yeah, it feels like Ram was kind of first to that.
I kind of feel like they left the Power Wagon in the dust. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that was the OG off-road HD.
Yeah.
The OG HD.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of been, you know, leapfrogged.
I agree. I still wish that they would come out. I'm not sure they're going to do it, but I still wish that they would come out with a diesel Power Wagon. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I think people, especially Ram fans, would love to have that option. Now, our friend Nick over at Ram says one of the reasons they didn't do it is because it's too heavy. And I can see that, right? I mean, that's a lot of weight. That diesel is a big chunk of metal.
I think the motor is about, I want to say it's about a 1,200-pound engine.
Right. So. But they were the first to put a winch in a truck.
Yeah.
From the factory, at least. And now, of course, you can get a winch in a Tremor. There's a whole bunch of trucks you can get winches into. So how about the innovation of overlanding trucks, right? That has become a super popular thing. And probably the best and most obvious example of that is the new INEOS Fieldmaster.
Yeah, Quartermaster?
Quartermaster, sorry, yeah. Not the Fieldmaster, the Quartermaster.
A Fieldmaster is a version of,
The INEOS,
it's like a trim
Grenadier.
That you can
get on the Grenadier. So it's a Quartermaster.
Yeah, this is a really cool truck. Solid front and rear axle, one of the few that's left, because if we think about it, obviously Jeep Gladiator still has a solid front axle. The Ford and the Ram HDs still have solid front axles, but none of the GM trucks have solid front axles. So they're kind of going extinct. This is one of our options. The only thing is that this truck suffers the
chicken tax.
So,
and it's amazing. I mean,
very expensive.
Most mainline manufacturers won't bring in a vehicle because of the chicken tax. Think of the Amarok and Volkswagen.
So they brought this Quartermaster here despite the chicken tax. And
that's a 25% tariff.
You got to imagine in however many years from now when these depreciate, whoever are heroes out there who bit the bullet to pay the MSRP when they're new, thanks to them, because maybe in a couple of years, these will depreciate and get down to a range where they're reasonably affordable, because these are such cool trucks.
Yeah, and for all of you guys out there and gals who think that the consumer doesn't pay the tariff, take a look at how much a Grenadier costs versus the pickup truck, and you'll see where that...
It's a big difference.
I want to say it's like $17,000 or something. It's a big chunk of change.
Yeah, it's quite a bit.
Is there pricing?
So,
yeah.
So let's see. That's a station wagon from 75 and the Quartermaster from 87, basically.
So, yeah.
So 12 grand.
12 grand more, yeah. Yeah, because of the chicken tax, directly because of the chicken tax.
Yeah, so Quartermaster, really cool truck. It's one that Tommy got to go test. We haven't seen it here by the office because it's not like INEOS doesn't have the same kind of press fleet and PR presence that some of the other big legacy brands have. So they don't have a Quartermaster out here for us to test. But Tommy got to go to the launch event for the truck, and it seems like a really cool machine.
Yeah, it certainly does. And we had the Grenadier. We kind of sold it too early. And the reason we sold it too early was because I took it out and drove it around one day running errands with it, and it kept beeping at me because of the speed limit warning.
You were over it?
I was really way over it. And we don't have that here, and yet they didn't like delete it.
It's a European feature to chime at you when it goes over the speed limit.
And it could be 1 mile an hour over the speed limit.
Yeah, and it just immediately starts chiming. It's something that you can switch off, but when you key cycle it, it almost always
turns
it back on.
Here's something interesting, speaking of that little chime. Did you know that when driving on a frozen lake in Sweden, because that's what I was recently doing, if you exceed 20 kilometers, you're exceeding the speed limit. So apparently,
there's a speed limit on
apparently
the ice?
There's a 20 kilometer speed limit on a frozen lake in Sweden. At least so that's what the car thought.
What you're saying is that a Bonneville salt flats there would be
it might
very
have a speed
boring.
Limit, yeah.
Very boring.
Very boring. All right. Some other cool innovative things, and these maybe fall into the realm of gimmicky. Have you seen that new isodynamic seat in the Tacoma?
I've seen it. I've sat behind it or attempted to. Yeah. What you're talking about is the TRD Pro Tacoma's seats. This is an innovation more so maybe in name than in function, because what limited space you already have for your legs
in
the back seat of the Tacoma is gone, because from the back cushion of the seat to the very back of the seat frame, the seat is like a foot thick. It's huge.
And you know, there's a ton of room back there anyway. So,
Yeah, this is the last truck in the world that they needed to destroy the leg room on.
And so what the isodynamic seat's supposed to do is it's supposed to give you like 4 or 5 points of, you know, of suspension, right? So that when you're out there on the Baja,
for those of
racing.
You who are watching, look how comfortable I look.
I know. So when you're out there, you know, racing the Baja and you're going through those whoop-de-doos, you don't hurt your back. I mean, it's kind of cool, but yeah,
here's
good. And it comes on every TRD Pro. I mean, it's gonna kill.
It's a standard part of the truck.
Yeah, you can't get a TRD Pro without the seat. So if you have legs. You're probably not going to want the truck, at least if you have to sit in the back seat.
My feeling is that it's let's say it gets you a 10 or I'd be surprised if it gets you more than maybe a 20% increase in comfort in the front seat or 100% decrease in comfort in the rear seat. And I know we care more about the front seats because they're typically the more often occupied seats. But it basically turns the rear seat of the Tacoma into a parcel shelf, like the rear seats of a 911. They're there, but you don't want to use them.
Yeah, and luckily Toyota builds a Trail Hunter version of the TRD.
But the thing with the Trail Hunter is you've got the snorkel that's screaming at you every time you touch the skinny pedal.
Yeah, that snorkel sounds like a walrus snoring. It's pretty
sounds
weird.
Sounds like a vacuum cleaner. Yeah. It sounds kind of cool, but if you were to live with that for 3-4 years, it might get old.
I could not live with that snorkel.
Yeah. Which
a desert air intake, sorry, is a Toyota.
Oh yeah, a raised air intake kind of thing. Apparently, we were talking to one of the guys that works at Mountain States Toyota down the road, which is a huge Toyota dealer out here, and he said, at least with the 4Runner, vast majority of the orders for the 4Runner are for the TRD Pro rather than the Trail Hunter, even though we're in kind of a rocky climate where theoretically the Trail Hunter makes sense. And most of those people were choosing the TRD Pro because of how loud that intake is on the Trail Hunter. Understandably so. It's the same one that you get on the Tacoma. It makes a lot of noise. Even with the windows up, you hear it.
Yeah, I mean, basically you can hear the turbo, right, kind of being echoed through that through that air intake. And if your window is down, it's pretty loud, yeah.
It's a fun party trick, but over time, you probably suffer.
Yeah, another cool thing, another innovation that Ford has done, and this is something maybe from the sports car world, is like variable exhaust note.
Yeah.
Which is cool. So, you know, you can open or close baffles in your exhaust on the Range Raptor. There's a whole bunch of other trucks that
get
do that.
Get you arrested in California, but yeah.
Yeah. And of course, the Raptor R,
doesn't
it's just going to be loud. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it has it as well. But you
remember a cold start on our old Mustang.
Yes.
Was loud.
Yes.
Really loud.
I love how they have for off-road use only if you go to Baja
mode. Track use only on the Mustang is what it says.
But I love that.
So yeah.
Good on you, Ford. You pushed the bounds.
They covered their bases.
Yeah. Right? You pushed the boundaries. And I think that's a much applauded thing. And then, you know, like we talked about a little bit, turbos and superchargers, right? Superchargers for the more powerful stuff.
Yeah.
And turbos for the less powerful stuff have become the thing. And for all of you guys and gals who love internal combustion engines that are naturally aspirated, I don't know. I'm of two minds, Case. Like people want the old V6 in the Tacoma, but that was just a really thirsty and kind of lame powertrain, especially compared with the transmission. You know what I mean? It wasn't great.
Full transparency. Both Roman and I are Land Rover people. And since we like Land Rovers, we get abused all the time by Toyota folks. So there might be a little bit
there
of
might an be a
internal
Land Rover bias here.
Yeah, yeah, internal bias and animosity here. But I'm kind of with you. The 4-liter V6 in the old 4Runner, and the old 3.5-liter V6 in the Tacoma, durable engines. And
yeah, that's it. Yep. Durable
so
engines.
There you go. Durable engines. Didn't sound great. Not great fuel economy, especially the 4Runner with a 5-speed transmission going up I-70 at a steep pitch in high elevation. If you try to accelerate, if you dare to accelerate in a bone stock with no steel bumpers or winches or big tires bolted to it, bone stock 5th-gen 4Runner going up I-70, if you dare accelerate, you'll be in third gear, 5,500 RPM, screaming down the highway.
Same thing with the Pentastar in the Gladiator, right? We've towed with that.
But at least an 8-speed.
Yeah, but I thought that thing was going to like push a piston or blow a rod or something, right? I mean, it was like, yeah. It's like...
So we live here in the mountains, and the low-end torque of some of these turbo powertrains is actually a really big quality of life improvement.
1,700 RPM on the new 2.4-liter turbo in the Tacoma. Peak torque, yeah.
Yeah, which is great. When you're up here in the mountains and you're sitting at 1,700 RPM, me personally, I'm happier than being at 5,500 RPM in the world's shoutiest V6.
Well, Case, I think we've probably gone through a lot of innovations, and we've probably forgot a lot. So if you guys are listening to this on a podcast, then just yell at us.
Yeah, you will anyway. Anytime we say anything negative about old Toyotas, we get berated. We're used to it.
And if you're watching this on YouTube, feel free to leave us a comment, because I hope we haven't missed any obvious ones. But we kind of went through it all, right? Off-roady, powertrain. Technology, yeah. I mean, yeah, Apple CarPlay, I mean, it's obvious.
Screens. We've seen too many screens, like the RAM screen over the glove box. Yeah, it's fine. I'm not sure anyone was begging for that.
No, and I'm to the point now where I'm considering buying older stuff that don't have, that actually have, that has real buttons and knobs and levers.
Less cost-cutting the buttons into screen features. Yes. And we like buttons.
Yeah, and God... haptic stuff. Oh my God. These trucks have kind of been spared for the most part. Yeah. Those little haptic controls that a lot of cars have. So at least in trucks, they still
have. Yeah, that you accidentally brush up against and now your fan is at full speed.
Yes. Yeah. Or your temperature control goes to 90 or 40 degrees because it's a slider.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of bad innovation that the truck world has luckily escaped to some extent. Let us know in the comments below, you know, what we've missed or what you think is the most innovative thing in the modern truck. And as always, this is Roman.
And Case.
Saying go to altfl.com for more news, views, and real reviews. Thank you to our Patreons for your support. You get videos ahead of time.
Yeah.
You get, questions answered by us. And you get our deep and thankful appreciation for supporting us, because without you, we couldn't do it. Anyway, see you next time. Ciao.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas mini bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.